Full Service Radio is proudly supported and hosted by Simplecast, the easiest way for a podcast creator to publish and distribute audio on the internet. For more information, visit simplecast.com.
You're tuned in to Full Service Radio.
Full Service Radio.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service Radio.
Everyone, we're here at Full Service Radio Studio at the Line Hotel for another episode of Know Your Scene. This is Stephanie Williams with music magazine DC Music Download. The song you just heard was called New Life by Dot Ekund. If you're new to what we do, this is where we get to know some of the key people who are doing interesting things here in the DC music scene. And here with us today, I am super excited to have Marcus Dowling.
Hi.
You might have seen his work in places like Pitchfork, Vice, and Complex, and he's established himself as one of the city's most prolific journalists, ranking in the top 1% of the most read writers on Medium.com. And he's also one of the core development consultants behind Decades Nightclub.
Indeed.
If you've ever been to it in DuPont Circle, which if you haven't, you should.
Absolutely.
And he's also the CEO of a startup called Capital Wrestling, which...
Absolutely.
I do want to talk about that.
Oh, we could totally talk about Capital. I'd be happy to.
So, Marcus, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So, Marcus, to start, you're from D.C.
Born and raised.
Born and raised.
Deanwood.
Deanwood. So, tell me about your experiences growing up in the city, and specifically what the music scene was like during the time that you were growing up here in D.C.
Oh, gosh. Okay, so this is great because people ask about my childhood. This is so fun.
Well, this is where I get to do it.
I know. I'm excited. So I'm 40 years old. So I was born in 1978. 1978 is when Bustin' Loose came out and hit number one. That means that go-go was a huge part of my childhood. I just did a go-go panel for you guys.
Yep.
Which was awesome. A lot of fun.
Yep.
That was kind of like, it's funny, we come to like DC music in my childhood. Go-go was like the thing. It's fascinating because I came to go-go because my mother had this collection of like 70s albums. And music for me visually starts with like Ohio Players album covers. And like, let me think of some other stuff. The Bee Gees. My mother was a big Bee Gees fan. She used to travel back and forth to the Paradise Garage.
Wow.
And go to discos. It was always a thing. You could take like bus trips from D.C. to New York back to go to the Paradise Garage because it was like that big of a club.
Wow.
And we didn't have that kind of like mega style nightclub in D.C. So those are things. And Go-Go was funny because it was like music to me that was on mainstream radio that sounded like music that looked and sounded like music I grew up with. So the percussive nature of it and like the funk of it and the soul that drove it and the danceability. Those are all big things. So you'd say like Rare Essence, their big breakout around like 89, 90. I was about 11 years old at that point. And that was like around the first time where I really realized that like I liked music. So the summer of 89 was like a big year because I was like the first time that like I was back and forth between my mom's a 3-time cancer survivor, breast cancer. So shout out to Kenetta Dowling. She's living and breathing and dealing over in Northeast. I was attempting to like deal with that, and I was back and forth between my grandmother's house and the house where I grew up with my mother. And I was listening to a lot of music in both with my grandmother's collection and my mother's collection. My grandmother had my mother when she was 16. So they have basically the same musical tastes.
Wow.
So that was like the big summer for me for like late era Motown. So not early era Motown like Martha and the Vandellas, but this is like post Edwin Starr War. Like Motown is like crazy funky and like there's wah-wah pedals on everything. So like I was like, my head was like being blown by this stuff. And then on the radio, you have like Work the Walls by Rare Essence, and you have, you know, a lot of those kinds of like those out. Lock It was big because I remember like the dance. Like I couldn't dance until I was 13. I somehow didn't have rhythm until I went to a school with a lot of like arrhythmic kids at Georgetown Day. It's fascinating. Just fascinating how that works. I had no rhythm. So like the only thing I could do at the dance was like the Lock It dance, you know, that comes with like Rare Essence's Lock It. So I would do that all the time. And those songs like resonated with me. So, and I didn't know that music is DC music. I just thought because it was like played on mainstream pop radio along with the other songs of the era, along with like New Edition, Troop, and Bobby Brown and all that. It's like, okay, so this is just cool music. And then the videos were on BET. So like I'd go over to my buddy Dominique's and we'd watch BET, and those videos were next to the pop videos. So we're like, oh, this is not a thing. And so it's weird. I got into high school-ish and maybe like ninth grade. And I did like an independent free study in second semester of ninth grade at GDS. And I rediscovered all of this music as local music. And I did like a local music study that was originally about me liking a girl that liked punk rock. Because, you know, I mean, when you were like 13, 14, there was some boy, some dumb boy that liked some dumb band. And you're like, I like this group too.
Yep.
So like every girl I liked in the seventh grade or eighth grade was like really into like alt rock and punk and hardcore. So I was like, I'm going to do a punk rock and hardcore independent study course. And I was like, oh, yeah. In the midst of doing that, like this punk funk thing pops up. The punk funk shows at 930 Club. And it's like, oh, so wait. Go-Go was played at like a DC show? That's weird. How would Go-Go be played at a DC show? Because I knew Go-Go was like mainstream pop music. By this point, like Northeast Groovers were a thing, and they were played on Top 40 Radio, PGC, NKYS, and even on 102.3, all over the dial. It was like Go-Go music. And I'm like, oh, this is just another genre of music, just like hip house or whatever else I was listening to. And it's like, oh, so this is DC? All these bands are from DC? And then it's like I had friends that lived in Berry Farms. And then I'm like sitting at like my buddy's house and talking to his mom about this thing that I'm doing. And she's like, yeah, you know, I used to hang out with Junkyard Band when I was coming up. And I'm like, Junkyard Band?
That like, must have been revealing.
Yeah. And I'm like, and I'm like, wait, so they're from here? She's like, yeah, they're called the Junkyard Band because they pulled out, you know, pots and pans from their homes and they played them. And I'm like, oh, wow. And so then like, this deluge for me of because it's like, and this happens to everybody, I think, when you like really dive into music. Music suddenly becomes recontextualized for you when you have like a place or like a physical location or like some kind of like place or feel locator with music. It just suddenly gets recontextualized because everything then gets built around it. So I'm like, wait, okay. So Go-Go's from DC. I'm from DC. I live in a place in DC where Go-Go came from. Okay, yeah. This is now my music. And now I'm going to like hold tight to this music and really, really dive into it. And that's been the story of my life now for, gosh, 25 years.
And so for people who are new to DC or who don't really know very much about Go-Go's history here.
Yeah, I'll give them a primer, a brief.
How, yeah, so from the way that Go-Go has evolved and the way that it is being treated now in terms of exposure, especially with venues,
yeah.
How do you sort of perceive all of that?
Okay, so it's a double-edged sort of a question.
It's a loaded question.
It's a loaded. It's a loaded. It's loaded as hell. So I'm good with it. We're fine. I'm ready to answer the question. As far as Go-Go as like a sound, I'd say first that, you know, for people who don't know, Go-Go is a sound that is inspired by soul music, Afro-Cuban rhythms, jazz, hip-hop now, and a lot of just like, you know, modern mainstream R&B. A lot of the songs are recontextualized covers of top 40 songs because most of these bands as like players are like amazing session musicians who could just play anything. So, and they reinterpret it in a very funk-driven way. The most important song of Go-Go, as far as like thinking of a song that you could listen to on Spotify right now if you're sitting in a room at the Line Hotel.
Oh.
Cheap plug, Jack. It's Mr. Magic by Grover Washington Jr. So it's kind of like this mainstream jazz funk hybrid. I say all of those words because if you walk around Washington, D.C. right now, there are perilously few people in. I'm not even making this a race-based thing, but I'm making it more of a cultural-based thing. There are perilously few people that understand the connective pop potential of jazz-based funk music that has tinges of soul and Afro-Latin rhythms.
Why do you think that is?
Well, I think that we've just gotten away from it. That's just a musical thing. That's just the way culture works, and especially now that so many things are computerized, and we just got out of the big EDM phase where everything turned neon for 10 years. We're kind of like drying out, I like to say, musically. I think that's like a thing in pop right now, is everybody's just kind of drying out. So you get a lot of those like slow, soulful, natural sounds that are everywhere now, like everything Selection is making, or like Solange's album. The Djelma Monae record is electronic, but it's not, it's more like analog 80s Prince electronic than like Alvin Risk to Steve Aoki electronic.
Right.
So it's a drier feel, and we're kind of like taking a step back. So I feel like we're not quite down to the level yet. I mean, jazz is starting to pop up, like the Kendrick record. And I mean, I wrote about, for Medium, I wrote about how Kendrick's jazz record, for a lot of people, was the entree to Kendrick's trap record, which is fascinating in of itself, because when an artist decides to recontextualize black history for the modern era by using jazz music, it should be the greatest album of all time. But the trap record gets the Pulitzer. You know, it is what it is. And that's because we're now at a point where, like, the thing is, you know, filtered down to the essence. And that's the fascinating part when it comes to Go-Go right now in D.C., is I feel like I'm happy that people are talking about Go-Go so much, because you should always talk about Go-Go.
Of course.
Because these are amazing musicians, just in general. Like, these are just great musicians. And then when you meet them as people, like I know you have.
Yes.
And as have I. These are amazing people.
And it's amazing.
They're just great people to talk to about music and life in general, just because they existed at a time in Washington, D.C., where Washington, D.C. was like 70% black, and the middle class was vibrant, and there was great sources of pride in being yourself, which just makes for cool people to know. I feel like that's like a thing. I don't think people talk about that enough, so I feel like I wanted to make sure that I said it.
Right.
So that hopefully people hear this and go, boy, I should talk to Big Tony from Trouble Funk.
And they should.
Which is fun, right. So that's a thing. I feel like we're about probably 2 years away from like real jazz and real like kind of like organically driven like experimental music becomes cool again, made with people who actually play instruments.
Yeah.
Because I feel like now we're starting to like wake up again. Like Kamasi Washington's entire pop rise has been fascinating to see.
Yes.
By the way, his new record. I don't know if you've heard the new
record. Oh, I have. Record. Yes. Fantastic.
Yeah. He's doing it. So there's a thing there for like people who actually pick up an instrument and play it to have a space in pop music. And when that happens, I feel like somebody, probably Drake, because Drake does this before everybody else. He's probably sitting on 12 records right now, will be the one to like actually make the go-go tinged pop record that somehow sample some amazing go-go record that everybody's forgotten.
Yeah.
And it just goes up the charts.
Yeah, because you can kind of feel that happening a little bit, like right. That rise. Do you think that, especially in D.C., you know, especially with go-go bands not necessarily having nearly as many venues to play as they used to.
They'll play Waldorf.
Do you think that D.C. kind of hinders that, though, from happening in a way?
It does, but it... Okay, so I'll put it like this. And this is a conversation about D.C. at large. This is the only place in D.C., the place we're physically sitting in right now, the Line Hotel, that's actually taking cool by the throat. Because that's what you have to do with cool. Is that cool is like a visceral, violent, angry rise against an existent thing. That's how things become cool.
Yep. Because DC government did have that DC cool. Do you remember that slogan for like a hot minute?
Right.
And then I don't know what happened to that.
But that's not cool.
Yeah, no.
Because you know, because when you're okay, so like when you do something that's cool, you have no idea. Moonbatone, for instance, the Moonbatone movement, which was, you know, like tropical bass music inspired by Dutch house music and Dominican reggaeton, became Drake songs and Justin Bieber songs and Ariana Grande songs and every song on the pop charts right now. We had no idea that was cool. We were aggressively, riotously dancing until 4 o'clock in the morning against people's perception of what cool electronic music was, or what cool underground dance culture was, or what cool was in general. We didn't know it was cool. We were like, oh, well, we're rallying against what's cool. Actually, in the wash, when you look at like the Billboard charts right now, like I said, it's actually the coolest thing in the world that we were doing. We didn't know it was cool at the time. Mm-hmm. So it's aggressive. It's violent. It's like a violent, visceral thing. Like, we are shaking the core foundation of what people do on a regular, everyday basis that they perceive as being okay. It's the only place, really, that's kind of doing that right now, because it's a converted church that's a 220 room hotel with a, you know, podcast studio and a coffee shop and three restaurants, and you know, it's an ecosystem unto itself. In order to make live music, I don't even think it's go-go, because go-go came out of just Chuck Brown having a band and the Young Senators being a band and these bands just needing places to play. If you run a restaurant on U Street, or if you run a restaurant, like, perfect guy to bring up, Robert Wiedemeyer. Bob's a good dude. And he likes jazz. He has jazz at Siren. And that's like his son, who's an amazing bassist. But like, if you're a band and you just played live music while people were eating food at, say, Siren, that's where it starts.
Of course, yes.
Because you just have to do it. And that's what makes it cool, because it's like a visceral thing. Like, we stood up and we decided, we're going to play music right now. Nobody else is playing music right now, so why are you doing it? Because I want to. That's the thing. You know, you have to be able to do that. And I feel like that's the only thing missing from DC.
Yeah, and actually from your experiences, because you do a lot of writing.
I do a lot of writing.
Especially on DC music and what's happening here. So what is it like covering music here in DC?
Okay, great question, because I've never been asked it before. Difficult.
Why is it difficult?
Everybody knows everybody.
Mm.
Everybody, okay, so DC is a giant small town. It's, you know, what, 61 square miles. So it's like minuscule by comparison to like other cities of note and intrigue. So it's really easy to like know other people making music. The great thing about other cities like New York, Austin, Seattle, whatever, LA, is that these are massive places. So at any time, somebody could be making like the next great thing, and you have no idea that they exist. DC is like that big. So everybody knows everybody else. And if somebody's making a song that's like great, the story's already done before I've written it.
Everybody knows.
Yeah. But as a writer, and I've been doing this for 10 years now, I know I've heard the song 7 times along the production process before it comes out. So by the time I'm writing about it, I have to like stop myself and have to say, okay, so I can't write about this as like Marcus Dowling getting an email about a song that's like an idea. I have to be like Marcus Dowling, journalist and advocate for DC music, attempting to explain to someone why this is great, which is a whole like crazy mind like warp that I have to do, where I have to like step out of my own body and occupy the body of someone else and then write the words from their brain.
Yeah, that's difficult.
No, and that's what I do. Like, honestly, like, that's the whole thing, is like I step out of myself and I'll step into, like, say, the gentleman in the gingham shirt in there right now. I'm in his body, in his brain. Because even crazier is, like, if I'm writing something for, like, a hyperlocal, like, let's say I'm writing for, like, Washington City Paper, which to me is a hyperlocal publication. It is the Washington City Paper. So it's hyperlocalized to Washington, D.C. Now it's online and it goes around the world, but it's still the Washington City Paper. So largely, in my mind, 75% of the people that are reading this article are in or have a direct interest in Washington, D.C. directly. So I'm like, okay, so I need to occupy this person's brain. Are they from here? No, of course they're not from here. Do they have interest in being proud of being from here because they are here now? Of course. Do they know anything about the history of music of D.C. in the same way that I do? Because I live and breathe this thing every day of my life. No. So then I have to go, okay. So I have to, like, dumb this thing all the way down to that level. And it's not like saying something stupid or someone's ignorant.
But have to introduce people.
You just have to, like,
Open the window.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it's all about creating, like, to me it's about creating that eye-to-eye communication musically.
Yeah.
So I'm like, okay. So, like, now I'm eye-to-eye with the song. As this person, that guy in the gingham shirt. What does he know? And then I'll have to, like, go back and I seriously, like, sit down. And I'm like, okay, so I know that he knows this and this and this and this and this. So this is the palette. So I'm like a guy at this point now where I'm, like, really esoteric with it. Where, like, I'm like a painter. I'm like, okay, so I've got my palette. I know the colors of music. Now to write it. And with the palette I have, there's even words. And concepts and phrases that I can't use. So, like, if I'm talking about, like, the Rare Essence song that came out last year, I could say this joint crank. And, like, a certain subset of the population would be like, got it. This gentleman, this joint crank. What do you mean? I don't understand any word that you have just said. So it's like, okay, as compared to this song and this song and this song does this thing. Oh, now I get it.
Yeah, getting people who aren't familiar with
right. So
with
it's
the music.
That's the difficulty about in writing about DC music, and that's best example. Because Spotify reposted it. It went crazy, stupid, extra viral. 7:30 DC, they do the morning newsletter thing. I interviewed Malcolm Xavier, the DJ for KYS Now.
Oh, yeah.
He was the first guy who broke Gold Link's crew.
Yeah, I actually read that article.
Yeah, yep. Yeah. So Spotify reposted it. It was like, meh! I was like, oh, this is great. So when I wrote that, it was funny because, like, when I was doing it, I was talking to Hayden Higgins, who's the EIC over there. It's like, he's like, so I'm not from here. And Marcus, because you're you, I would like for you to, like, explain the context of why this song is so important. And I'm like, well, how many words do I have? And he's like, oh, you have, like, 700. And I'm like, really, bro? Really? Like, for real? I have to do that? Okay, I guess. So then it's like you have to, like, break it down and you're, like, highlighting. And then I have to, like, again, it's the palette thing. Of, like, all right, so I'm going to choose the butt. I'm going to choose something by Wale. I'll choose, like, Lotus Flower Bomb because it was the big pop hit.
Yep.
And I'll choose Awesome by Shy Glizzy because Glizzy's on the track. So I got to, like, have the ratchet in there. And I'm like, all right. I got my little palette. Now I'm going to, like, and then I'm like, okay. So now I need to interview Malcolm. And I'm like, okay. So, like, again, I'm, like, almost 40 at that point. So I'm like, crap. And then I realized I haven't talked to a DJ under the age of 30 in Washington, D.C. in, like, 5 years.
Wow.
I'm like, whoa, okay. So, like, I don't know what's going on. Like, I don't know, like, what these guys are, like, even playing. And then it was funny because, like, in the middle of the interview, like, remember, if you read the interview, mm-hmm. there's a point where he's talking about, like, I make these blends with 80s and 90s R&B songs. And I'm like, whoa.
Well, wait.
Okay. Now we have a whole other context.
Yes.
Great. So it, like, colors. So it's like in the middle of it, I've got the article working in my head while I'm talking to somebody. That's another thing you do as a writer, especially like for me in DC, is always have the piece working in my head. So I'm like, God, he's working, and I'm talking to him, and it's coming together, and I'm like, oh, this is good, and I'm like jamming away, and I'm like in my head, like it's going, and I'm talking, and then all of a sudden it's like,
right,
and then it's like, quick, like let me scramble, like, get these other paints on the palette, and then ask a couple more questions, and then sit back, and now I'm like rewording it in my head, and there's like a piece of the interview. If I could play the interview like physically, you would hear where like I ask a question and I trail off at the end of it. Because in my head, I'm like, wait,
Thinking about...
I think this is going to, like, change the way I'm going to do this.
Wow.
Actually,
I've been meaning to ask you. So, yeah. What was a piece that you did about anything related to DC music that you felt the most proud of? That you were like, man, this is probably, if I were to pick any piece, this would be the piece that is the most memorable to me.
Okay. Great. This is exciting. I interviewed Alvin Risk for Complex when Do Androids Dance still existed at Complex. And at the time, Alvin was like just past the like big, because Alvin was like at the forefront with like Avicii and Martin Garrix and all those guys at like the big room EDM boom. He was like the last guy. But still in that room, like, you know, like of like the genius people that made EDM. So like we're talking, and in the middle of the interview, he's like, I'm making music for the space program.
Yeah, and that I'm sure shifted everything, right?
And I'm like, and then in my head, I'm going, okay, so DC music, because, you know, Alvin's from DC. I'm like, wait. So we've taken this whole thing from, like, dudes literally banging on pots and pans to, like, a guy from here at Kennedy Space Center making music for a Mars module so that if there is life on Mars, this is the level of it that, like, blew my mind. And, like, it, like, okay. So there's moments in interviews where I do things locally, where the whole context of what we can do as a unified body politic of musicians and artists and creatives in DC can do massively will shift. So like, I'm going like, well, you know, junkyard played on pots and pans. If there's actually life on Mars, the first music that they will hear from the planet Earth is from a guy who I know lives in Northwest Washington, D.C.
That's insane.
He's like, boom! Just like, that's... It's crazy, right?
Yeah.
So you're like, okay. So, like, this is, like, an amazing moment. And then I'm like, I'm sitting there, and I'm, like, recording an interview, and I'm like, wait. So I'm on the phone with this. Oh. And you have to, like, sit up in your chair, because you're like, okay, now this interview is, like, super serious. And then you never want to take it too seriously, because you're... I was, like, sitting in a chair in my boxers at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And I'm sure there are people who are doing far harder jobs, like, in not their boxers. So I can't be that serious. Like, it's like, you know,
right.
Like, you know, drinking a margarita and doing an interview at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Not the same.
That's a good life.
It's a good life. It's a good life. It's a good life. But no, so that was the moment. That was, like, this interview where I was just like, wow, I get to be on the phone and have this moment. And I get to share it with people. And it's like... I get to mention that he's a DC artist, which I always love to do in like global publications when I can mention like so-and-so, you know, or Washington DC based artist XYZ. I'm like, oh, that's so cool.
Yeah. I actually was going to ask you. So when you write for a local publication versus a national publication, do you feel like you have to be different in terms of the way that you speak about DC music? I know we talked a little bit about that,
it's a matter of context.
Right.
Locally, I always write about DC music as a thing that you can see first. I'm all about the visual of it because this person is a DC resident, typically an African-American DC resident. So you always want to make sure that like this person that looks different than most people in the city right now is an amazing creative force and likely someone that you would probably, you know, never see or never think to stop and look at. So that's important to me. Like, make sure if I wrote about, like, Jamal Gray, I'm like, I want to make sure that when you walk down the street and you see the guy with, like, half his head shaved and, like, half bit in dreads and, like, maybe a hole in his shirt, he's he's not the guy you think he is. He's a brilliant musical, like, auteur who he's the progeny of two generations of jazz legends.
Yeah.
You want to make sure of that, you know, like, and then it's like, when I write about it nationally, it's important for me to contextualize just how impactful DC is as a scene.
Do you feel like as a journalist, you have certain obligations in terms of the way that you cover or the way that you represent DC?
It's funny you ask that question. I wrote a piece for Mix Mag last year about raving in Trump's America. It was about Rome, the Rome parties that Lisa Frank and Chris Nitti and Sammy Y and Zim C. Young.
Yeah, those parties are amazing. I mean, for phenomenal. Those who are listening that haven't gone, I mean, it's an experience.
Yeah,
I mean,
like,
it's more than just a show.
They do a hyper-curated deep house and techno party in the middle of these warehouses, and it's not like the warehouse party where you look up and they've like, we could textualize the warehouse. You didn't know it was in a warehouse. No, you know you're in a warehouse. You know you're in like a gay bathhouse in Northeast D.C. or wherever it is. You know where you are.
Right.
And it's the music and the people playing it that controls the scene. And that's the part of it that I wanted to like reflect, was like the scene is controlled. Like there's like, there are very few people who like DJ in this generation who's like, I mean, usually getting people to jump up and down is pretty simple, but to like get people to like, to guide people through like emotional and like emotional like realms.
Yeah.
And get you from experience. Like here to there.
Yeah.
It's the whole thing. So I'm writing this piece, and I send it, and this is like, I remember it as clear as day. Writing this piece, I send it off for Duncan Dick, my editor in Mixmag, and Duncan writes back to me, Marcus, I accepted this piece because you are, to me, Washington, D.C. I know no other person who's writing right now who is so proudly from where they are from than you. If you are going to write this piece for me, I need you to write this as a native Washingtonian first, as a music writer second, and as a fan of music third. And I'm like, oh. He's like, feel free to hyper place locate where you were when you saw a thing happen. And I'm like, okay. So I was writing about like the Mike Pence like party that took place in front of his house during the inauguration. So I'm like, so do you want me to say like I was on Wisconsin Avenue two blocks down the street from Mazza Gallery and this and this and this and this and this? He's like, yeah, all of that. And I'm like, wow. Do you want me to contextualize like down to the socioeconomic brackets of the people who live in the homes and all that stuff? He's like, absolutely. I'm like, do you want me to talk about like how long it would take somebody on the metro to get from like the middle of DC where this thing usually happens to all the way up in Bethesda where this was kind of going on? He's like, absolutely. He's like, I want this thing to feel like Washington, DC at all times. And I'm like, oh, I didn't know. He goes, that's your value.
Wow.
And it like blew my whole entire mind. Because it's like Mixmag. This is like the New York Times of electronic music. Them and Resident Advisor. If it doesn't happen there first, it didn't happen. So I'm like, oh, okay, great. Because it was like this crazy moment, because it was like, wait, so you care enough about the city where I'm from now as a scene in the music that you claim to be the, you know, the news or first report about, that you really want this to like reflect organically the streets, and not just like, there is a large obelisk off in the distance and it was a hazy day, you know? No, he's like, no, I want to know like names and stuff, because he's like, this is a city that's like happening right now. And I was like, cool.
Yeah, I mean,
easy. And then I wrote it, and if you look at it and you go back and read it, there's like all of this just like bing, 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 bing all over it. It's crazy.
So for you, because I mean, you're an encyclopedia of knowledge when it comes to music here.
There's so many hours.
But no idea. Hey, yeah. I mean, you know it. I mean, you definitely are someone who's super knowledgeable.
Thank you.
And
I try really hard. Really hard.
And I would love to know too your thoughts about the state of DC music, and what are some things, and we touched a little bit on this with Go-Go, what are some things that you think that people should know that is happening? And what do you think are some things that you think can be improved?
This is like actually a quick answer. Funny. I had a great conversation with Aaron Abernathy, who's a genius of a soul musician. He's able to take like the past and present and future of funk and soul and find something in there, like right the line right between where funk and soul are, and just nail it every time, and it's got the groove. And it's very rare. And I'll say this about Ab right now, and he'll probably hear this and like punch me in the face when he sees me again. But there hasn't been somebody this locked into a groove in a city, especially in DC, since like Chuck. Like,
wow.
He's got the groove, like the groove of like of generation, and the groove of like I Need to Know. Like those songs, like they feel like a place.
Yeah, and his live shows are mind blowing.
Yeah, I mean, like
he's a showman.
Nat like Turner, that band,
right?
Knockdown Drag Out, they're locked in. So I had a conversation with him before he like went on the big tour he's on right now with Black Milk. He, Nat Turner, the band that he is part of, they play for Black. And he's like, I want to lead this thing. He's like, I don't know how.
And what was he meaning by that?
Well, okay. In order for any scene to be great, somebody has to lead it. For examples for millennials, Diplo had to lead Mad Decent, had to like be the guy at the forefront of like what Mad Decent was for that thing to like pop and become this like culturally hyper relevant thing that spawned Major Lazer and a million other things that largely created his career, where he's, you know, produced for Beyonce and Usher and all this other stuff. But he had to stay at the front and be like, hi, I'm the guy. Mr. Mad Decent, Diplo, Wesley Pence, right here. Look at me. DC music doesn't have that.
No.
It's a weird mix.
Why do you think that is? Why do you think that there's no
this is short,
face of
this is
DC music?
A short answer? Because punk was so cool. And also, there are fewer black folk in the city now than ever before. Mm-hmm. So if the city were 70% black, somebody would have like created the fusion of go-go and hip-hop and house music somewhere probably around like 2000. And this would even be a conversation. Everybody would be a star. Uptown XO, Wale, Odyssey, so on and so forth. They'd all have million-dollar homes and they'd be living on the Gold Coast. They would.
Yeah.
You drive up 16th Street and you'd see all of them. Like, Wale living next to Odyssey. They're both, yeah, you know, mowing their front grasses. That's what they'd be doing. It'd be great.
Yeah.
But that's not the case. Young white musical creatives in DC are so afraid of eclipsing the punk legacy. Because it's the punk legacy.
I mean, it's definitely an important legacy.
Yeah, it's
that's
massive,
tough to follow.
Right. It's
right.
Massive, but you have to like. And there's also a thing about like being white and a musician and a creative, especially if you're physically in DC, where you probably come from means or relative means as opposed to other people who make music. And it's hard to like feel like you have to struggle. And if you don't struggle, the great music doesn't happen.
Yeah.
You have to. It's all context, you know, like. And it's all like contextualizing your work, the style in which you work when you're creating the music you make against your real life circumstance. So like rap music couldn't have existed if there wasn't the fear of immediate complete poverty.
Yeah, if there were those obstacles right. to set that foundation.
Exactly. So it's like, okay, I have to make this song because, and this song has to be great because it has to sell 1 million copies because I need to move my entire family out of poverty.
Yeah.
I need to get everybody from like the South Bronx to money earning Mount Vernon.
Yeah, there's that urgency.
Right, like supreme urgency. So there's no urgency if you're like, oh, I made a song today. Now I'm going to go to Thomas Sweet and have an ice cream cone.
Right, right.
Like, it's not the same. Like, oh.
Yeah.
There's no, like, passion there. It's like, oh, ice cream is delicious. Thumbs up. And there's a lot, and not to be controversial in any way, but there's a lot of, like, music that aims at being difficult and made in a context that seems, like, struggle-based. But as compared to other music that is struggle-based from around the world, because D.C. now, because D.C. is a thing, and, you know, we're sitting in a hotel that makes D.C. a thing. It's not as resonant with, like, that kind of, like, creative crucible that makes the really good stuff. So, like, a song in Washington, D.C. that's, like, a house, or actually a techno track, even better, because there's a lot of good techno being made in D.C.
Oh, yeah.
It's not the same as compared to, like, the stuff that kids are making in, like, Angola or, like, Durban, South Africa, where it's like, okay, in Durban, for instance, because, like, Jikom, which is a genre that is very popular down there, the kids that make Jikom, like, they, G-Q-O-M, by the way, and I'm pronouncing it correctly.
G-Q-O-M.
Yeah, Jikom. You should check it out. You would enjoy this. You play, if the
I'm
song
sure
you
I
play
would.
Early is anywhere, like, indicative of the music you're into right now, you would enjoy it.
For sure.
If you, like, there's a, like, a thing. It's like, okay, so either I make this track or I step outside the studio and get shot gangland style on the streets of my hometown. Like, that's where it's at. It's like L.A. in 89 times 20. It's crazy. So, like, there's not that kind of, like, push
yeah.
on somebody who's, like, making a techno track in D.C. It's like, wait, I'm fresh. I have a college degree. I have access to my mother's car. I have an opening shot at Flash.
Right, and chances are they have a 9-to-5.
Right.
And, you know, they have.
Or even if you don't, you're still, like, you're in a better position than, like, somebody with a 9mm pistol is going to, like, roll up on me after I make this really dope track and blow my head off.
Right.
So this track has to be, like, the best thing I ever made because this may be the last music I ever make in life.
Yeah.
So it's a different thing. So DC doesn't have that.
And, yeah, you brought up also this notion of race.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
And,
we can talk about it.
You know, and the fact that, you know, in DC, one of the things that is a topic that people, specifically musicians, bring up is this notion of silos and the fact that, mm-hmm. you know, there's not really a whole lot of cross collaboration. Do you think a little bit of that is a racial thing?
Absolutely is. 125%. You don't know what you don't know. And D.C. is funny. I was with a friend of mine. I was taking him over to where I grew up. I was taking him from up in Woodley Park all the way to Deanwood, which was a fascinating trip, you can imagine. And the first thing he says, man, this area of town is literally segregated by railroad tracks and the Anacostia River. So if you have to, like, you literally have to drive across town, then cross train tracks and a river to get to this other part of the city. I mean, the same thing goes for, like, even going from here to Georgia Avenue.
Yep.
You know,
there's
like...
There's a Stark.
Yep. Right. So it's like a thing. Like, and if you live in Brookland and you, like, make music in Brookland and, like, there are these dope musicians... Say, like, they're at Uptown Art House. So you have to go all the way from, like, Brookland across, like, the earth and yonder to Uptown Art House. And then feel comfortable enough to walk into a free and open space where bohemian artists are oftentimes not even making music, but they're like drawing on the walls like prehistoric cavemen.
Yeah, and also, by the way, surrounded by a neighborhood that's very, very different than what's inside.
So you have to be able to like, there's so many layers because DC is DC, and then you have to also tie into the fact there's like so large parts of DC where like the idea that there were riots in 1968 that totally ravaged the city have like, we still have not recovered from that. So you have all these varying layers of like cultural context. Not even human, like you and me not having talked in 6 years.
Right.
Context, which is crazy, by the way.
It is crazy, but hey, we made it happen,
right? We made it happen, right.
Finally.
But that's what it is. And it's all, and I can tell you how that happened was because for a large part of that time, we occupied different scenes.
Yep.
We just didn't know the same people.
Yeah. And it's crazy how...
Right.
I mean, DC feels like
both,
a small...
And we're both black.
Yeah. Which is, you know, like... And it's crazy because DC is a small town, but also it's crazy how you can have those very different experiences.
Yeah, so it's crazy that way. So, like, imagine if you were white, even crazier.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, we wouldn't even... Well, maybe. I don't know.
No,
but
we would. It would be accidental almost.
Right.
But no, it's a thing to think about, like... And if there was a way to break those silos, I think that it has to be conscious. Everybody making music in DC right now has to be like consciously aware of who they are. And this is like on a musical level of like, I am a musician, owning it, being proud of it, and living it, and like breathing it, and being like, I'm a musician. The music I make is important. These are important things.
Yep.
And not enough people do that. Like,
yeah.
great example. I interviewed Denmate for Jules Hale from Denmate for Bandcamp, like maybe a year and a half ago. And one of the most fascinating parts of that conversation, Jules probably doesn't mind me saying this, and if she does, I'm sorry.
Hi, Jules.
You're the best. In the middle of that interview, we started talking, and it was fun watching her like realize that like she could break out of the cocoon. Because she created a cocoon, like, and that's what makes her music great, is like she's so drilled in to this cocoon of like, this is my creative space, I own this space, I make this music, I write these words, and then these guys play it for me. It's this mind-blowing, very cool thing. But like, it was fun, like we're talking, and it was fun watching her like realize, oh God, I'm having this cool collaborative conversation with someone that I didn't know until like 45 minutes ago. And it was fun just watching it, like, you watch like the little like, you know, cocoon like break open, and then there's like a little like butterfly wing that like pops out. And at the end of the interview, I felt really good because I felt like there was like a little butterfly wing that was popping out of like Jules' cocoon. And every time I see anything Jules does now, I see like the little, it's like Jules Hale to me is like a creative artist. To me is like forever now, like the butterfly wing just out of the cocoon, like doing this.
Yeah.
And it's like I always want to like, and I pitch people all the time. I'm like, I want to interview Jules. And they're like, but you already did. I'm like, I want to interview Jules. And they're like, but you already did.
But again.
I'm like, I want to do it again. And they're like, why? I'm like, because I want to. I don't have the temerity to say this human being whom I respect as a creative force, I want to like strike the cocoon again. I want to be like.
Right. Yeah.
Because not enough people do that.
Yeah. And like, it's got to be more than a one-time conversation, too.
Yeah,
it's like it builds over time. Yeah.
And shout out to Jules, who will text me every 3 to 4 months and say, we should have coffee. And we never do. We should. And that's the thing. And I know that happens for you, too. Like,
oh, yeah.
With, you know, creators all over the city. Like, it's like, oh, we should do this. And then we never do. But that's the thing that people have to be consciously aware of. Like, if you're a creative and you do a creative thing, then, like, find another creative that does the exact same thing. And just look at them and say, be great. Like, as writers, like, the greatest thing that's ever happened to, like, all the writers in the city, especially the writers of color. Marcus Moore, who's no longer with us, he's now in New York and writing...
Oh, writing for Bandcamp. He's writing Kendrick Lamar's biography.
Yeah. That's
amazing.
It's amazing. But before he left, he, like, did this thing where he, like, got all of the writers of color together, like, very clandestine. It was, like, double secret email. Like, you had to know somebody to know somebody to know somebody. And we would get together and, like, sit at a happy hour and just talk about success. And it was like brilliant. We talk about like, hey man, I just wrote something for this, or I wrote something about that. It was just like success breeding success and like validating people's creative potential. And like everybody who was in that room, like Brianna Younger, who's now in New York too, like everybody who was in, Mikkel Clark, another one who was in that room, just happened for him. It was amazing.
Yeah, and that's how it has to happen. Just people getting in a room. Yeah. It's super simple.
Exactly. It's really that easy.
So Marcus,
we are
out of time, unfortunately. I feel like we could go on for many, many hours. We could make this into a marathon.
Yeah, just let me know if you want me to come back. I'm down.
Oh, for sure. And I'd love to hear more, too, before we go, what projects you have in the works that you want people to know about.
Oh, gosh. Okay, so this is a fun question because I'm at a point where I will tell people to go to Decades Nightclub, 1219 Connecticut Avenue, Northwest, Washington, D.C., 2036. I will tell people to read me in print in Mix Mag this month. I have a little piece with their DJ history thing, which I'm proud because it's a Bill Brewer site in Mix Mag. And I did a piece about Avicii's Levels, R.I.P. Avicii.
Yes.
Gosh, I will tell people to look at my medium.com/@MarcusKDowling.
Well, you're the top 1% of the people.
I'm the top 1% there, so find me. And also, I can't say anything about half the stuff I have coming, like at all, because it's all like brand new stuff. But I will say that Medium thinks that I'm in the top 1% of writers about black people and feminism. So if there's any two topics that and spaces that do those things that you should keep an eye out for, it's me writing about both of those topics, because I have a political science degree, and so I'm like really politically sensitive, and so things have just started to strike me now, and so now I'm like active. So that's the thing to watch out for, and still keep an eye on the musical stuff. There will still be stuff that pops up, but definitely like those spaces in a hard sense, but in the more like esoteric sense, like just keep an eye out because it'll be fun.
Cool. Well, Marcus, thank you so much for being on the show. I'm glad
you're
we're
welcome.
Able to talk.
Absolutely. It was
took
a pleasure.
6 years, but we did it.
Check out DCMusicDownload.com. They do a fantastic job over there. It's a wonderful site.
Oh, well, thank you so much.
At DC Music Download on all social media.
Yes. And you're also on Twitter. You're also on...
Yeah, at Marcus with a C-K, Dowling, D-O-W-L-I-N-G. Feel free to follow me. Holler at me. Ask me questions. I'm like super responsive.
Yes, so, yeah. He is. And I can attest to that.
Yeah. I'll get back to you in 15 minutes. No problem.
So, Marcus, thank you again for being on the show.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you for everyone at home for listening. And we're going to leave you with a new song by DC artist/producer Rob Stokes and MC Sir EU. And
Sir EU, my favorite rapper in DC. Shout out to EU.
Yes. And their song's called Unavailable. So we'll leave you with that. And take care and have a good night.
All right.
on the lowdown. Pull out the verdict, trying to judge me. The world can't come and play co-host. Intellectual, introspectual, with profound company. I showed out, I had to let go. Interdimensional, connectional facility. You cuffed me, then called out. Rough me up, love me, then rolled out. Stand off and shit, and roll with the showdown. Yet cautious enough to